Please be advised this podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature. It's not appropriate for children. A special Patreon shout out to Libby Prescott this week. She signed up ages ago, but I somehow kept overlooking her in the thank yous. Well, I mean, we all know how I overlooked her. It's because I'm hopeless at admin. I keep telling you that, but thank you, Libby, and everyone else who supports us through Patreon. It's patreon.com/austtruecrimepod. That's AUST, True Crime Pod. The link is on our Facebook page, and it's thanks to all of you that we have our first meetup coming up, which will be a free walking tour of Pentridge Prison. So stay tuned for the details on that one. The details are very closely linked to today's show. So let's crack on with it.
You're all right, Keith? Hey? It's all right, Keith. You're not going to bleed to death, mate. All right? They call the screws. The screws are coming.
Draw a cigarette, Keith.
You're all right, won't we?
It's all right, mate. Have a cigarette, Keith.
You don't much like me, do you, Keith? You bash people for no reason just to make a name for yourself. You're a fucking idiot. I'm not a dumb cunt with piss and blood, Keith. Right? I'm the one who runs the division, mate. Make no mistake about that, all right?
What's going on here?
Oh, no, she's sweet. Oh, Keith seems to have done himself a mischief.
Stay back, boss. Step back, keep out.
You all right, Keithy? Off you go, mate. Off to the sick bay. Ah, whinge, whinge, fucking whinge. You nice late one tonight, sir?
Don't mind, Mark, I'll get through you.
Bit of overtime.
All in, mate.
Enjoy.
I sincerely hope that scene needs no introduction or explanation. It is, of course, the classic Keithy's done himself a mischief scene from Chopper, the best Australian movie ever made, starring former comedian Eric Banner as Australia's favourite charismatic hitman turned best-selling author Chopper Reid.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb.
Much of the action of the film, including the classic Keithy scene, takes place in H Division of Melbourne's notorious Pentridge Prison, also known as Pentridge College, Coburg College, the College of Knowledge, which was opened in 1851 and in many ways hadn't changed much at all when it finally closed in 1997. Our guest today is Vaughan Ruddock, who was a guard in H Division during those crazy, hazy days that would go on to be immortalised by Chopper Reid. We started off by chatting about a topic that fascinates many Melburnians, and that is the fact that much of the site that Pentridge originally stood on has since been developed into luxury townhouses. How could you live there, we keep asking each other. Well, Vaughan has some intelligence on some strange goings-on in those townhouses.
One woman there's getting her son exorcised because he hears and sees things. I spoke to her. She's
true?
Taking him to some to get. You know what exorcised means?
Yes, sure do. I'm very good Catholics.
Yeah, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I can't believe it. A little kid in the pusher. He, because my mate got stabbed where she lives now 17 times.
Oh,
is that right?
By.
Okay.
Who now drinks around Mooney Ponds. My daughter knows him. He's a drinker. Takes girls home for the night. My daughter worked in the pub.
Yeah.
Yet he's a murderer.
Right.
No one knows, but I know.
So this lady, I wonder how much she paid for her apartment, and now she's got to pay for an exorcism as well on top of it. That's annoying.
It was in the old boot shop. Yeah, my mate got stabbed. You're taping this now,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah. You're on.
I worked there on overtime. I used to leave them alone. I didn't needle these prisoners. Some prison officers used to needle these blokes. They can get hurt, stabbed, assaulted. I was pretty easy going. As long as you don't escape. And
that's a good point, isn't it? I suppose you could get in there and sort of entertain yourself and put a bit of shit on people and all that because you can leave at the end of the day. But why would you?
You have to be careful. You work in B Division. There's 140 of them. And there's about five or six of you. Mm. And over the lunch breaks and various things, there's not many of you there.
Mm.
If you want to start a riot, it's easy to do. You have to get it. If you're going to charge them or do something, you get them after hours when their mates are locked away because they'll gang up and throw chairs on you.
Yeah.
There's all wire mesh through there so they can't throw things on your head.
But they'd have long memories
or
too.
Or boiling water on you.
Right.
Jokes. So you had to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to arrest him for spitting on you during the day, do it after you lock up. His mates are locked away. Take him to Haste Division and he won't do that again.
But won't he? I mean, even if you get him after lock up and all that and take him to H Division, he might come back 8 months later, mightn't he?
Usually they'll learn the lesson. They won't do it again.
Okay.
They don't do it again. I'll tell you a good story if you want to hear about that.
Yeah.
I know you don't have corporal punishment, but we had a prison officer stabbed, murdered. Tony Tickner going home from work one night. He was from the railway station. The street, I think he was drinking. He had to go up the street kids, 16, 17 year old, and one chased him and stabbed him in the chest, killed him, Tony Tickner. And he got charged with murder and got 3.5, 4 years for murder because he's a street kid, he's underprivileged, This is in the 80s. And they had to bring him into jail and Pauline Toner was the minister. Never seen this ever happen in my life. When he was brought into jail to do his time, they brought him into H Division. H Division was used for protection too, to keep them away from other prisoners, such as Julian Knight and these blokes. They'd probably be murdered the first year or two. So they brought him in and the minister brought him in, this 17-year-old kid. And because in those days you get a clip on the ear hole when you come in H. But because he killed a prison officer, our mate. And the governors came in with her, the minister, Pauline Toner, who's dead now, died of breast cancer. And they took him down to H and lodged him into H and said, don't touch him. Orders from the minister, don't touch him. And my mate Gary was the senior down there. I won't name his second name.
Sure.
And cut this out if you want. But every day, hey Gary, how's he got? He's a little bastard. He's never had any jurisdiction. No one's ever told him what to do. He's probably been the school bully. Just guessing. Mum and the de facto are scared of him. He's probably been stealing. They come up through the ranks. Mm. They get warned by magistrates. Teachers are scared of him. Then eventually he's done this, killed Tony Tickner. And He's gone wild down there. He wouldn't do what he's told. He was cheeky, we can't touch him. So he kept. So as the weeks rolled on, I said to Gary, how's he going? He said, he's all right now. He said he threw a cup of coffee on the chief of H Division, which you don't do. So we gave him a hiding.
Mm.
He said, I think I broke my hand, I hit him that hard. A couple of times. Go down and have a look at him now. And I went down there to do a job, and there he was. He was the billet down there. Cleaning the floors, making tea, coffee. What do you want, sir? He changed kid completely. Never heard of him again. He did his time and didn't ruffle anyone's feathers. So I know you don't believe in capital punishment, you young people, but it can work. Counselling wasn't helping him. Mm. I don't know. I don't.
I think, and it was of. I guess that was of its time.
That's what happened. This was in the 80s.
I'm not pretending to know better than you.
No, about, we've never worked in a prison.
No, absolutely not. I'm not going to pretend.
But these things happened at Ace Division.
Yes.
Not all the time. As I started to say, 90% of these blokes come and went. You wouldn't even know their name. Yeah. There was 10% of people, of course, trouble. You got to know them, the Chopper Reeds, the Allens, the Prendergast. You got to know all the Boltons. You know, they would attack you, kill other prisoners.
Can I ask you about when you started at Pentridge, please? Do you remember, what year did you start there?
97. I was there 16 years. I started in 78.
How old were you then?
Oh, dear. 33. I was born in 45. Worked that one out.
Okay, 33. So you're in the prime of life, actually. Mm. And you're a strapping man. You're 6 foot six.
Well, I'm not a violent person. I never ever touched one of these blokes. It's not me. I was a Vietnam vet. Got out of the army and needed a job.
Wow.
Because I had a bit of, I showed a bit of form. I got to learn to march and then I had a salute. So I got the job.
Great.
I left school at 14 years old. What am I going to do? Mm. You know, sweep the streets. So it was a good job. Kept yourself clean. I had a few morals. So I paid for my house in 12 years.
Great. Wow. So what did you make of these men, though? I mean, I'm assuming these were men the likes of which you hadn't grown up with or known or hung out with before.
I used to love crime stories.
Yes. Well, so do we.
I used to read about William John O'Mealy, the last man flogged with a cat of nine tails, Peter Walker and Ryan, the escapees. Billy Longley, there was a magazine out, crime magazine called, was it Parade Magazine or Crime? I used to read all these stories. I remember Peckman the ex-killer got out of Pentries with a ladder over the wall and white overalls, thought he was an electrician. Oh. And these escapes fascinated. Then I saw an advertisement for prison officers, 1978, and I thought I'd give it a crack. I was a bit shy in those days, and it brought me out of my shell too. Mm. So I put my hand up and got the job.
Wow.
Got a nice uniform. Yeah. Mm. Oh, the girls chase you all over the streets, eh?
Yes.
I'm making part of this up, by the way. So the first, we did.
Don't tell us which part.
Yeah. We did our 10-day introduction course, and first, because I was so big, they stuck me in H Division. That was a cultural shock for me. I didn't like it.
Tell us more about H Division. Yeah. What is that now?
Well, you go there for... You can be there for punishment, protection, like Julian Knight. The first time I saw Julian Knight, when Julian Knight came to jail, they stuck him in a hospital for the first start.
Okay, so this is just after he's taken himself out on Hoddle Street one night and just started shooting people, walking past.
Seven people and 19 others.
Terrifying.
Little bloke. He wouldn't be as big as my left leg. Little moustache.
Mm.
Little wimp he was, but he was loved talking about it.
Even Chopper Reed has... on record as saying he's mad as a cut snake. And coming from Chopper, that's quite something. Do you think he's mad?
Who?
Julian.
No.
Okay.
You know why?
Why?
Because he passed officer training in the army.
Yes.
He was at Duntroon, trained to be an officer.
Mm.
He would have been interviewed by a psychiatrist. Because you've got to realise, ladies, some people are just arseholes.
Okay.
And I think he wasn't getting his own way. He stabbed his sergeant at a disco one night in Canberra, got thrown out of the army, and I would have taken his guns off him straight away. But they didn't. In those days, there was no licences, so we had him under his mum's bed. I'll tell you when I first met him. I was down at Hastings. I took a tradesman down there to fix something, and he was the billet down there. Well, he was polite. He was not a danger to us because he wasn't a crim.
No.
He wasn't a gangster. He was a normal kid gone off the rails, okay? Did a dreadful crime. And I'm a shooter. I shoot clay targets every weekend. I should be there today, but I'm not. I come to help you out.
Thank you.
And I says, listen, you arsehole. I said, we're going to lose their guns there because of you. No. I said, I'm sorry, boss. He said, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do this. No. And he was his eyes lit up. Someone's talking to him about what he'd done.
Mm.
I said, what sort of guns did you use? I didn't know in those days. What did you use to kill these people? He said, I'll use a Chinese SKS for that. I'll write it all down for you. H Division's got 39 cells. He ran upstairs to cell 37, 38. That was his cell. He come down half hour later with a handwritten note for me. I killed someone's house sale with an SKS 7.62, da da da, and all the rifles, the ammunition he used. He was glowing. I carried that with me for a long time, that bit of paper, until it fell apart. I used to show the blokes at the gun club. And eventually it fell apart, but there's no remorse, not a spark of remorse. He loved to talk about it. We had a famous case. There was a shootout at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. Mm-hmm. I think you can find it on YouTube. I cannot, it doesn't come up. I'll tell you the story if you wish. Mm-hmm. First, this happened just before I started. When I started H Division, there was blokes, I told you who was in there, and also a bloke by the name of James Reimers, Jimmy Reimers, him and his brother were in jail. Jimmy Reimers was a drug addict. It wasn't a bad type of prisoner. He knocked off a gun shop. I know a bloke who knows the factory in South Melbourne. Stole a heap of pistols. Now, Jimmy had to go to hospital. He was down in D Division, I would say. He was taken to the Royal Melbourne Hospital by my two friends, Steve Stevens and Harry Terzinski. Steve Stevens was an ex-warrant officer in the British Army. Moustache. Does do it my way or the highway. Doesn't take shit. Am I allowed to swear, am I?
Yep,
don't take shit from anyone. Great officer, good officer, you know. Don't swear at me, son, I don't swear to you, you know. Don't call me by my first name. And I think some of the prisoners like this when they see that wall, blue wall in front of them. Anyway, they picked him up. He was full of, I'd been on heroin, took him into the Royal Melbourne Hospital, handcuffed him. Harry had the 38 Smith & Wesson, you know, with a gut 38 mm-hmm. police service revolver. Took him into the old entrance. Not the one now, it's around a Royal Parade. That was the old entrance back in 1977. This happened in 1976 or 7. Now, they sat him in the seat amongst all the people, in his handcuffs. Steve with the gun stood by him. Harry Terzinski stood by him. Steve went over, he said, I've spoken to them all. They've all went over to the counter to put the papers in. And I heard a fuss. Looked around, and here's Jimmy Reimers on the seat with his handcuffs on, holding a pistol at Harry's stomach. Harry's got the gun, the only gun between them. They only got one gun. And he was backing off with his hands up at his stomach. Steve turned around and says, you're not getting away on me. And I ran straight at him. And as he put the gun around at me, I grabbed the barrel of the gun and I pushed the barrel down. Bang, the gun went off between my legs and hit the wall of the hospital.
Wow.
That hole was in the wall for years. They pulled a Coca-Cola machine over it eventually.
Oh, my God.
He said, you want to hear the people in the waiting room? They were screaming and running out the doors.
Terrifying.
Bang, the gun's gone off. He's on the ground. Then Harry ran up and I said, I grabbed the gun and I've gone bang straight into his face with a 38.
Oh, wow.
And I hit him in the jaw. I tried to hit him between the eyes. I've got him bang straight between, hit him in the jaw. The bullet rattled down his left side of his jaw, broke it in about four places and lodged in the back of his neck. And he's laying there covered in blood. He didn't die. Well, obviously, he was still there when I was there. So he's laying on the floor. Now, what happened? A woman walked past with a blonde wig on and threw a gun on his lap. This is one of the guns he stole. But she made a mistake. There's two types of pistols. There's single action and there's double action. There's ones you keep pulling the trigger and they go off six times or 15 times if it's a clock. This is a double action. You have to actually pull the trigger, then get the hammer back for the second shot. Yeah. Older-fashioned type of gun. Mm-hmm. He couldn't get the hammer back because he's in handcuffs and he's wrestling with the prison officer who weighed about 14 stone. So he couldn't get a second shot away because So he's on the floor bleeding. The woman in the wig, probably his wife, we don't know, ran out, never got her, threw the wig in the garden of the Royal Melbourne Hospital. I got the wig. And she took off, never got her.
Wow.
So they took him back. They saved his life. I spoke to Jimmy. Jimmy, when I met him in H Division, he used to slur with it, a bit of a slur, and he had a bit of a dropped shoulder where it pierced his nerves. We used to take him back to hospital regularly to get surgery. But every time we took him, we made sure we had three officers this time. But it's just lucky she threw him the wrong gun, Jimmy Reimers. Mm. Think you can find the story anywhere?
I've never heard that story.
That's incredible.
And Steve's now dead.
Mm.
Harry's still alive.
Wow.
So that was another one at H Division. Then there was Jimmy Balsley. Now, this is, you said Chopper Reed, who was mad, but there's different levels of insanity.
Yes.
Now, Jimmy was definitely... He only died a few years ago. I saw his name in the paper. He was in mental health care. Where was it? Out of
Thomas Embling?
Embling,
something
yeah.
Like that,
he did 40 years. Jimmy was mad. Little bloke, harmless little fella to me, but he killed a copper on the Flinders Street Railway Station. The cop was standing on duty. He came up behind him with a knife and cut his throat, stabbed him in the throat. He bled to death.
Just for no reason.
They found Jimmy sitting over the Young and Jackson's Hotel drinking beer covered in blood. He was mad, and he used to talk to Jesus all day and all that. He did 40 years. He was generally mad. Talked to the angels and, you know, they keep. See, these blokes, they keep. The way we could control them with drugs.
Yes.
If they weren't taking their medication, they can be dangerous.
Yes.
Keep more mellowed out.
Yeah.
You're with them all day. You got to know who they were. Keep an eye on him. He's a bit unstable. Da da da. Bring the doctor. Da da.
Have you seen Chopper the movie?
I helped make it. Yeah, I had a bit to do with it.
There you go.
Oh,
so
okay.
I love that movie so much. But do you?
I had a part in it, but I had to refuse it.
Oh, did you?
My daughters never forgive me. I could have been a part of a cult.
Why did you refuse
it? So much. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
But
I had
other things
in the fire. I took Eric Banner in for the. When I was doing the tour, it was 1997, 89. I got the Jesuits ran it.
Mm-hmm.
Father Peter Norton.
Yeah, right.
He made a lot of money, $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Some days you get 10,000. You couldn't walk. 10,000 people paying $10 each.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady, she's an ex-nun, said to me, "We had a producer from a movie set rang. They wanted any prison officers work here."
Mm-hmm.
So we said, "You were one. We were making a movie about. We need to speak to someone." I said, "Well, I'm available. Give him a ring."
Yeah.
So I went down. What was his name? Do you remember?
Eric Banner?
No, the producer.
No, I don't know who.
Look, he comes to me now and then.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I rang him. He says, "Come down to the film studios in Port Melbourne. Have a talk to us." So they're chatting away. And he said, "We're going to make a movie on Chopper Reed." I said, "We'd love to get in the H Division. We can't get permission." I said, "What H Division?" I said, "I got the keys in my pocket. I got all the keys. My mates, only Eastgate was open of a night time, it was closed. Want to get in? I'll get you in." He said, "What about your I want to get some lighting and look at the place. Never been there."
Yeah.
"So, all right, I'll see you 10 o'clock Wednesday morning." Whatever. Eastgate, bang me a mate, "Yeah, no problem." He says, "So I'm down at the Eastgate 10 o'clock, put my car inside the gate, and this white ute pulled up, and out gets Eric Banner and..." Oh, whatever his name was now. Look it up on Google.
Who played Jimmy Loughnan?
No, the producer.
Oh, the producer,
they
right.
They got out.
I'll
right.
find it.
And
yeah.
Eric Banner, but Eric Banner had changed. He really pumped up.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, "This is Vaughn." Da, da, da. I says, "You are playing Chopper Reed, aren't you?" He says, "How do you know that?" I says, "Because you look like
him." Yeah.
This is before he was sort of famous.
Yeah.
Like,
really, yeah, that was his first.
That was his
movie
turning
role.
Point.
Yeah,
and
really.
Chopper Reed, like, he said, "How do you know?" I said, "Well, I know the bloke. We're not. So anyway, I took him in the H for the afternoon, for the morning, spent a few hours there, told him how they walk, sweep, where they walk, where the murders happened. Give me a bottle of whiskey. I don't drink whiskey, I had that on, and would you like a role in the movie?"
Yeah.
I said, "I'm not an actor." He said, "Don't have to." He says, "Just to give me the knife, Jimmy. Remember that? Give me the knife, Jimmy. Put the knife down, give me the knife, you know the rules?"
Yeah.
That was my part. I said, anyway, I told him, "Mate, I can't do it."
Oh.
Because I had a few other irons in the fire.
Sure.
Andrew Dominic was the director.
Andrew
was the director.
I saw him in Flinders Lane a few years ago. You remember my name? How you remember my name? I don't know.
Oh, you're a memorable dude.
Yeah.
What did you think of the movie? What did you think of the characters like Keithy and, guys in H Division?
Well, you know Keithy George. They couldn't use his real name for some legal reason.
Right.
So they use him as Keithy George.
Because he's my favourite character when Keithy's like combing his hair with that black boot polish and, "Hey, Keithy, that's my favourite scene."
But Keithy Ford's still alive.
Is that a real person?
Keith, there's his name here. Keith Ford's still alive. You want to hear about Keith Ford?
Yeah.
He's killed five people.
Holy
he's in
boy.
Jail now, an old man in his 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Keith Ford, but they couldn't use his name, Keith George Ford. Now, he was, he never got murdered. As I told him, I said, all these things didn't happen.
No.
He said, "Vaughn, it doesn't matter.
It's a movie,
it
mate.
Was just the script to make
artistic sound, license.
Artistic license.
Yes.
Thank you, Emily. And it didn't happen, all those.
No.
Chopper was a liar. Pack of
well,
lies. I read all
not.
These books. I never bought them.
No.
They were given to me. I read them. What a pack of lies. I was there when it all happened. I know what happened.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. In his books, we had a bomb go off in A Division one afternoon. You could hear it from down Sydney Road. Six tier up the top, bang. The roof was blackened in the big arch. Have you been in A Division?
No.
I've only ever driven past Pentridge.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, God, I had the keys for years. A bomb went off. Three blokes were sitting on the bed. They never got killed. It was in the front page of the paper. Their names will come up. I'll Google them up once they came up.
Mm.
They went to hospital for a week or two, came back. They were deafened and they were sitting on a bed. There were wooden floors in the cells. And someone puts the explosive under the bed, under the wooden floor.
Mm.
It was jelly knot. No one knew what it was. Did a forensic test on it. He said, we're sitting on the bed. Next minute, bang, the three of us are floating in the air with this concussion. When we hit the ground, we got out the cell. They're pretty fit. And as we got out, all the gases ignited, bang, and burnt all the ceiling. It was a lover's tiff. I know what happened. So they went to hospital, come back. But in Chopper's book, written by Sly Down the World.
Yes, and Andrew Rule.
Rule.
Yeah.
He said, I organised that bomb at A Division that afternoon. He says, I had to sort out a few things with people. He did nothing. He was locked up in high security. He did nothing. We made the bomb out of White King and bleach and what he never... It was the best kept secret. No one ever knew. Everything's always leaked. We know what's going on with them and they know what's going on. They know where you live, you know?
Mm.
It was, we found the gel ignite. Someone did it. It was going around the walls behind, and there's some loose rocks. They pulled them out, and there's this old sticky gel ignite. And it goes weepy. The nitro will come out of it. If you touch your head, face, you'll get a headache. The nitro will go straight into your head, give you a headache. It was all hit there, destroyed. But he never knew we found the rest of the explosives. But in his book, I made the bomb out of stuff we had in the laundry.
He said the cause was a lover's tiff. What was the...
Tale of a little homosexual prisoner was in love with someone and, I don't know, I'll get your attention one way or the other. Put a bomb under your bed. You all do that.
You and your fellow guards could have been seriously hurt or killed, really.
Could have been. I don't know how they set it off. I have no idea they ignited it. But entertaining. When Chopper came into a room, you see him in the hospital go down. The room lit up. You know, you ever go to a party and someone in the corner, you're sort of magnetic, you go towards them because they're entertaining.
Yeah.
And he was one.
Sort of makes you miss the old boy, doesn't it? Varley Chopper Reed. Well, we're not quite finished with him yet. After the break, we'll hear about the terrible demise of his mate Jimmy Loughnan, also immortalised in the Eric Banner film. And yes, I did say it was the best Australian movie ever made, and I stand by it. Coming up on Australian True Crime, more amazing yarns from lovely Vaughan. First up, the character of Jimmy Loughnan, played by actor Simon Lyndon in the movie Chopper, was almost comic relief. But the final moments of the life of the real Jimmy Loughnan were as brutal as anything Pentridge ever served up to anyone.
That poor Jimmy was a sad case. He wasn't, he always had a limp, I told you.
Yeah.
He escaped, jumped over a wall, broke his leg, and I think he got shot in the arse. He robbed the gun shop, the story I heard, it might be true, but he robbed the gun shop. He went and got a gun off him, empty gun, looking at a pistol, but he had some bullets in his pocket. He pinched the gun, and the bloke said, "Leave me a gun. I got nothing to sell." So he left him a gun, and that's when he went out the door. The bloke shot him with it. He put a couple of bullets out and shot him in the bum. They had this stupid idea: we're not going to escape. They're bored, so they do things. It's opportunism. They're in their unit. So what we're going to do is, it's all hydraulic doors.
Mm.
Officers look through. Bad idea. You got to be prisoners. You got to be with them. You got to talk to them.
Mm.
You feel the mood of the moment, you've got to have a key, let them in, talk to them. This electronic zoo is no good. They get up to all sorts of trouble. You leave someone on their own too long, things can go wrong, you know. So they wanted to set a fire, escape, take hostages, whatever works. They don't know. Fills the day in.
Robert Wright, Jimmy Loughnan, Arthur Gallagher, David McGauley,
Gallagher,
and Ricky Morris.
All. Yeah, Gallagher.
Yes.
Yeah, Jimmy, I know the best of all.
Mm.
Was Robert Wright the one with...
It says he was a triple killer.
Yeah, he was the one with Paul Haig, wasn't it? Double killed the girlfriend, stabbed 100-something times. I think it was Wright or was it Reed? I think it was Robert Wright was his mate. Wow. Anyway, I could be wrong. So what they did, they had to stop the prison up the screws, as we're called.
Just a bunch of scallywags.
They went out in the yards and they got their wire that held the tennis net up. It's a wire that holds the tennis net up.
Yeah.
And they smuggled the wire in and they put brown paper up on the glass so screws can't look in, and they wired the doors up with this wire, with the hydraulic. The doors wouldn't open. Then the five of them, yeah. Then they got their... all the chairs, mattresses in the middle of the room are set fire to it all.
Oh, my God. So they've trapped themselves in there. These
trapped themselves geniuses. In, airtight, yep. But they were going to survive. They were very smart. They cut their washing machine hoses off. They pumped the water out of the toilets, like you get a pillow or bail it out, they clear the S-bend, and they put the pipes down the toilet. They're going to breathe air through the pipes, through the toilets, the five of them. Mm. When the prison officers finally get in, they'll take hostages. This can't go wrong. Take hostages.
Right.
But they made a fatal mistake. They weren't breathing air out of a sewer system. You breathe methane gas. The five of them died. My mate had to drag them out. And prison officer never works, smoke inhalation. People risked their lives to try and help them. Father Peter Norden bagged his foot. You know, it was all our fault. So the five of them died.
Oh.
And they changed the name to K Division then, get the stigma away from it, because the prisoners didn't like being locked up. See, I was the mail officer for my last 3 years, and I learned a lot. Prisoners don't, what they tell their lawyers and their mates are different than what they tell their families and things. They tell different stories.
Mm.
They hated it.
Mm-hmm.
But they made it sound like this is going to ruin me, you know, you're going to make me worse. But they didn't like being there, you know, they hated it.
Being in Jaika Jaika after that.
Yeah, and that's sort of good in a way.
It spooked them.
Yeah, but they couldn't show you that emotion.
No.
Oh, I can handle it, but I'm going to come out worse. Now, you hated it. So they end up, they changed it all, took out all the hydraulic doors and had more officer on, and they put women there at the end after they had women at Pentries, they put women in there at the end. Okay. Fairly, the ones that stuffed up in Fairly put them there.
Fairly Women's Prison, that's right. That was before Dame Phyllis Frost, which is where is now, right? Is Fairly Women's Prison still open or is it closed?
No, that's gone now. It's just gone. Down near the Yarra, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Goodness, they had a fire there in 1983. Three died. Smoke inhalation, went up, rioted, went over there. I was on holidays when that happened. It must be over Christmas. My mates went over there and they had a big riot there. And so they bricked off part of B Division and put women in there. It was like a social experiment.
Mm.
And they put them in there from 83 to about 87, about 5 years. A few got pregnant. No, don't know how. And they sort of interaction with them. It's going to make males better prisoners if you have females with them. We've got more female prison officers, a bit of interaction. Yeah, got pregnant. Female officers married them and smuggled stuff into them. Well, Heather Parker.
Yeah,
Mary Gibb, yeah. We all knew that was going on. A copper got shot in the chest over that motorbike chasing them through the Docklands, remember?
Tell us more about that. Who is Heather Parker?
Because when I was the mail officer, I used to read both their mail. I found out a few things.
Oh, great.
No one knows this. It must never leave this room.
Never. You don't even know what a podcast is.
Heather Parker was married.
Yep.
And a lot of the female officers, for some reason, they fell in love with these blokes.
I can tell you exactly why. We love a bad boy. Mm.
It's the bad boy.
It's the bad boy, and we see this other side of them, and we think, you know, there's good in everybody. And I heard it during the week. There's this sort of wounded, caged animal vibe, and... You know, yeah, it's very common.
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah,
the bad boy. She was married with a couple of kids.
She was a guard, right?
They all worked. Yeah, her and her husband were guards. Worked in Jaika.
Mm.
We all knew she's having a fling with Peter Gibb. Peter Gibb wasn't a bad type of bloke. A lot of these blokes weren't bad blokes, and they had charisma and that. And I tell her when I was doing tours, look, marry me. What am I, boring? Go home, have your tea at 6 o'clock, read the paper, you know. I usually have a snooze for an hour and go to the toilet and go to bed. But these blokes, bags of money, anyone Touches You Love, we'll knock them, and
Tats.
Kids got $10,000 in paper bags, wants to have a sniff of drugs. And a lot of women, wow, what a lifestyle. This is not better than changing the nappy, you know. So, yeah, you know, you've got to change the nappy. She lost a bit of weight. She was like I used to watch prisoners with the prison officers. There's a lot of them. There was what was her name? Married Gallagher, another Gallagher from South Australia. Heather Parker run away with the names again. Heather Parker. The names will come to me. I've got to think a minute. Linda Peck married Gallagher.
Yeah.
There was a Kathy Mallow I started with. She ran away with a bloke who robbed the big Target store, the gunman.
Oh.
No, the cousin of him. The name's gone.
Well,
she was a good sort.
These blokes say,
gee, you smell, you know, that every day. She lost a bit of weight. They say, gee, you smell nice.
Because the other thing we've learnt, Vaughan, from women who we've spoken to is that men in prison are very attentive, unlike men on the outside, because men in prison are riding in long
drink your bathwater, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And, gee, you smell nice, Miss Parker, this morning. You lost a little, your hair's looking nice. And over the months, wow, he likes me. My husband couldn't give a shit. Mm. And, so she was having an affair with him. We knew that because they moved her to Spencer Street.
The Remand Centre.
Yep. And there was no bars, there's big windows, glass, because this is the new prison. Now, you can't have bars. It's all oppressive. You've got to have windows, more open jails. The outside walls are good. They can't escape. But inside's more freedom. They just did $20 million worth of damage to one of the jails.
Mm.
But no one got hurt. That's the policy now. Well, we had a riot. We got hurt, but it didn't last long.
Yeah.
So then they suspended her because she was blokes I work with. You see, and they say, she's in and out of broom cabinets with him, and he's going down. So we know. So she's put off for a while. But too late. She'd smuggled some drugs in. Drugs. Listen to me. Explosives. I don't know what it was.
Oh,
anyway, there. Him and Archie Butterley. Was Archie Butterley? In a room, put some explosives on the glass window, sheets made into a rope, female officer came in, get out of here or we'll hurt you. So she ran away. I think I ran in 6 for 6. I think I would have had a crack myself. I don't know. Anyway, boom, blew the glass out. Black Suzuki motor car with a gun under the seat. Her car. Because I come to work that morning. The governor's out. Oh, shit. Two have escaped. Well, who? Black Suzuki. I said, that's Heather Parker's got a black Suzuki.
Oh, no.
That's her car. You know, got the gun, took off to Dockland, shot the cop on the motorbike chasing him, remember?
Yeah.
And got away. He got killed. I think Peter Gibb knocked him off. I think he was couldn't go on. You know, hey, mate, Pete, put me out of my misery type of thing, you know?
Oh.
I think. So they both got captured after, I don't know, what, a couple of weeks? Can't remember. So she's in remand in Spencer Street, and he's in H Division. And they're both writing to each other, because you're not allowed to read the print. You can if the governor gives you permission, because you've got to watch him for evidence, da da da. So, because he's not a bad looking bloke.
He was in I was reading, a payroll robbery. He was serving 10-year sentence when he met Heather.
Gangster. He wasn't a murderer, he was a gangster.
I can remember the pictures of the time. I guess he was, you know.
I took him to the old Panch Hospital much years earlier.
Okay.
Because he was a heavy crim, we had three of us on him. He had to have an operation. So I took him into the ward then. He's at his own ward.
Mm.
And we had coppers outside giving us a wave. They were always, because they might have got him out. And they put his pyjamas on in front of me. He had a scar from here to here. I said, Jesus, Pete, what happened there? He said, I was getting out of a car. Once the coppers pulled it over, they shot me under the arm.
Mm.
Nearly killed me. Bits of lead went everywhere. And that massive scar. I remember he got shot. Mm. What a bad-looking bloke, Peter. Nice personality, like a quiet type of bloke and that.
Mm.
So they're writing to each other, and I used to watch them. When she started to write to him, she started like normal writing.
Mm.
Oh, the prison officers have searched my cell today, and the police have interviewed me again, and look, love, keep your chin up. And as the months rolled on, her writing changed. The screws ramped me cell, and the jacks have doing this again, and she's turned into a crim.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
You know, and I watched that, and I used to read this, and I'd take it to the governor's show, and it was fascinating the way she changed. Anyway, that love affair lasted a fair while until he died a couple of years ago.
Did he?
I saw his name in the paper. Peter Gibb died. They all had hepatitis and stuff, drugs. Not all those blokes from those days are dead now.
For some reason, that's made me really sad. I just got real sad that he died then.
Yeah. I do remember at the time it was just such a massive Lenny story.
Nate. That's right. Kathy Mellor, I started with Kathy Mellor. She's a good sort too. Mm-hmm. She took off with Lenny Nape, a gangster. It's another one.
How'd they work out?
The trap.
How'd they work out?
I don't know. I don't think it lasted long. I don't think so. They look good in jail, but she was a good sort.
I mean, I guess the thing is, you know, in that very confined environment, and I can see how prisons can turn the charm on. They're very attentive, as you said, Michelle. Then when you get out into the real world, it's probably the sheen's probably gone off.
Yeah.
And
well, on that, is gay for this day? Is that real? Like, do hard men, are hard men gay in prison when they're there for a long time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, not all.
No, not all.
He would have been dabbling.
It's funny you bring that name up. This is definitely not going
in. In his books, he keeps mentioning. I was looking for one of my workmen one day. It was supposed to be mowing lawns. I was using the mower and he was disappeared. I'm doing all the work for him. So I kicked a few doors open to B one afternoon and there he was on his knees behind. And so I think he was his mate. Why? I don't know.
No, but a friend of mine tells a great story about living with a gay guy and years and years ago and he brought a friend home and stayed with them for a couple of weeks and never left the house, but always gave them heaps of money to go out and just said, just bring me home some food, and was rooting the guy. And, and then years later she saw on TV and realised it was
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he was just laying low in their flat. And
I read that Martin Bryan in Risdon, he offers sexual favours for, like, bottles of Coke.
You younger ones can handle it. I threatened me. I went and told his mates. I just caught being covered up the arse. And I was scared for a while because he was a heavy. He's going to get you knocked off and dob me, you know.
Because you'd spread it around a bit.
Yeah, I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
I broke the 11th commandment.
That'd
be a big mouth up. And something to talk about because you're bored all day.
Yeah.
I used to check my car for night. I had a look for a while.
Yeah. Well, actually, let's get on to that. I mean, were you ever scared? Because just listening to, I'm pretty sure it would have been Andrew Rule's podcast, which I'm obsessed with.
Me too.
Yeah. There was one episode he was talking about a story that he wanted to write, and he went into Pentridge to interview a man, and they had quite a good conversation, and he agreed not to print whatever it was that this man specifically didn't want printed. But when he got home, there was something in his mailbox, and he took it as a message just to say, I do know where you live and I've got people on the outside, just to remind you that I'm serious about that. So did you ever have any incidents like that?
When they got phones, the first time they put phones in Pentridge to placate these people, we were on strike out the front and they put phones in, shut them up. And they put phones in and phone books. Up till then you couldn't even read the Truth newspaper.
Mm.
You had to edit everything so you couldn't. So they gave them with all our names.
Oh, no.
All these piles of phone in B Division. And I'm not in the phone book, I saw a number, but my father's Victor Ruddick, same initial as me, lives at 140 Sussex Street, Coburg.
No.
And of course, I could hear the crimson. We know where you live, Ruddick, 140 Sussex Street, Coburg. Oh, that's me old man. But because you charge someone, and they wouldn't do it, but they have done it. Nail blokes catch the fence, damage your cars out the front.
I feel like we need a Vaughan series.
Oh, definitely we do.
What's
but before
matter?
We need a whole series.
You won't get rid of us now.
We'll
be having you back.
But before we go today, could you talk to us about Adrian Bailey, please?
Yeah, Adrian Bailey. All right, Adrian Bailey killed Jill Maher on a Saturday night. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
Poor Jill.
You're absolutely right, yes.
Walking around on your own, feminists have the right to walk around on your own. But
well, everybody has
my daughters
not just feminists, yes.
Don't. I know who's out there. I've seen hitchhikers on the side, rapists, the murders, hitchhiking. I've told my daughters, there's Alan Connell, the ferret, hitchhiking. Never pick anyone up. I know. Got to be careful. Don't do it. He had a Commodore car, dark Commodore car. I go and get my car serviced at Brakes Plus in Faulkner. Glenn, my friend, Monday morning, Adrian Bailey is on his doorstep with his Commodore car. He said, I want the car, I want new tyres, I want another exhaust system.
So see, this is what annoys me, Vaughan. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think this piece of shit has raped and attacked so many women in his life.
He was in jail when I was there, Bailey, as a teenager.
He knows so well what to do about it because he's done it that many times. He's been in and out of jail that many times and assaulted that many women. Mm. He knows, well, quick, Monday, best get down there.
Get the new tyres.
Yeah, you know, that's what annoys me. It's like
the girl on the walking track in Doncaster, was it Reed?
Her name was Marcia. And
it's all good
he should have been in jail. It's all good and well to tell
women, tell women not to walk home at night time. But you know what? Tell him that he's not allowed out of jail anymore because he can't stop raping people.
I would.
Yeah.
I would let him out.
Of course.
But the new system lets them out. They have civil liberties, let them out. Mm. Our Mental Health Act, they closed all the mental health homes down. Sunbury, Ararat Stall, out here in they closed them all down. You have to live in this community now. You have rights.
But Adrian Bailey doesn't have mental health problems.
You're fine.
He doesn't have mental health problems. He's a rapist.
He's just an arsehole, a nasty bastard.
Oh God, we all hate Adrian Bailey.
There's a lot of shit walking around that could kill you. A lot of. So he said, "I want a new sauce and tie, and I want a new boot mat." Mm. And the Commodore, Glenn says, "Really? Nothing wrong with it. I want it. Do it. Cash money." So it was about $1,100. Where do you get $1,100 from? Didn't work. No, it doesn't work. Could have been in her purse. I don't know. Anyway, so Glenn gets in his car, goes down Anderson Street, Faulkner, test drives the car, takes him home to Coburg, lives with his wife in a bungalow, Coburg, dropped him off, fixes the car tyres, new boot mat, and picks him up, $1,100 or something. So, Glenn, the phone rings. Faulkner police. The police. Glenn, I want to talk to you. Yeah, okay. When can you come down? I'm busy. I think it was like the Wednesday or Thursday. Come down and talk to us. We want to talk to you about something. So they go down. He said, you know when Adrian Bailey... This is like this week.
That's amazing.
He said, well, he's a customer of mine. He said, you're a mate of his, are you? No, he's a client. Well, how come you've been driving his car?
Oh.
He says, what do you mean? He says, there's a picture of you driving his car down Anderson Street. There's a picture of you in his driveway.
Mm.
You were following me on the Monday. You were in that black Peugeot. He says, yeah, we were watching you. They knew he had murdered Jill.
The policing was amazing.
They knew who it was by Monday morning. Mm. They called him in. They had pictures of Glenn driving his car in his place. And they says, okay, so we got you. They arrested him within a week.
Thank God.
So you said you knew him from when he was a teenager.
No, like I didn't know. He was in jail when I was there. I didn't know him. He did nothing. You don't know these blokes unless they stand out.
Well, this is it. I can't imagine he's very tough around men. Adrian Bailey. I can't imagine in a jail actual hard men.
They're not.
He would stick his head up. Yeah, absolutely.
They're wimps. The nutcases of a crack at you, I'll kill you. But they're wimps. I was going to tell you a Ned Kelly story. But
Go for it.
You know, Ned, you've heard the Ned Kelly story.
Yeah, I've heard many Ned Kelly stories.
It's all over. 1880.
Yep.
1880. They're all dead and gone. Not a soul around.
Mm.
But I found one who knew someone.
Mm. Mm.
2002. I listened to this story. I love the Ned Kelly story. Been to all the sites, Stringy Bark Creek. And I met someone. 2002. I'm in the old Melbourne jail as a tour guide. And a woman came over with her father, George. Away from Ballarat. This is my father, George. He's 92 years old. He was born in Ballarat in 1910, of course. And this is Dan Kelly's armour, da-da-da-da. And while I'm talking, because I love the Ned Kelly story.
Yeah.
He's a murderer. But it's part of our culture, I think. And someone let someone, I hope it's Vaughan, excuse me, someone else said, what was the name of the prison, the policeman who wasn't killed at Stringy Bark Creek? Before I got it out, old George said, that was McIntyre, you know. I said, yeah, McIntyre, he escaped in the wombat hole, you know, terrified all night. So when he went, I said, George, how did you know? How did you know it was McIntyre? He said, I knew old McIntyre. What?
What?
He said, in Ballarat, old Mr. McIntyre, he was an old man with white hair and a beard, used to get around his horse and jinka. This is like First World War.
Oh.
Get around, his horse was blind. I remember his horse was blind. He used to steer it around. And I says, McIntyre, I says, yeah, I was about 8 years old. We know old McIntyre. It was the copper. Now, I'll tell you why. When Homer got me books out, this is pre-computer days.
After the
court case, anyone who went evidence against the Kellys, that was Kelly country, Catholics, anti-British, one of their own state. Anyone who went against the Kellys, you couldn't live there anymore.
Yeah.
Like the school teacher, Kernow, the school teacher, McIntyre, anyone who went evidence against the Kellys, they moved them, and they moved them to Ballarat.
Oh.
Kernow, the one who held the red land, stopped the train.
Oh, I see.
They were going to derail the train, kill all the police, because this is normal behaviour. We all do things like this. Sure. That rag he held over the lantern is in the Benalla, and the green sash he had covered in blood.
Yeah.
It was given to him by Bluey. I know he's a relation there, Bluey Sheldon, the football player, Bluey Sheldon from my day. That was one of the Sheldon boys. Mm-hmm. He saved him from drowning in the river in Avenel.
Yeah.
And the family, whose pub's still there, the old pub, it's a house now, gave him a sash for saving their teenage son who fell in the creek.
Wow.
And when they took the armour off Kelly, the green sash was underneath it, covered in blood, and that's in the museum too.
Oh.
So they sent them all to Ballarat to get away from the Kelly country.
Mm.
And there's McIntyre's grave in me book. He died in 18. George was 8 years old.
Yes.
So that'd be true.
Yeah. Sure it is.
Did you love that story or what?
I
love that story.
We'll have to have you back on.
Oh, yeah,
will you come back?
And we'll definitely get these tours going.
What about a walking tour?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
You won't shut me up there.
No,
I'll show you how the escape happened.
I'm sure you've probably guessed by now that Vaughan is indeed the former Pentridge prison guard who's offered to take us all on a tour in January. And it's going to be a free event for our wonderful patrons. If you haven't signed up yet and you'd like to come along, you can go to patreon.com/AustTrueCrimePod, AUST, True Crime Pod, and become a patron. Now, if you're not in Melbourne, don't stress because we're going to be doing similar events around the country. We'll also record this and so you can listen along. There'll be lots of other events and lots of other great treats for our patrons. Thank you so much for your support.